The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, well, it is great to be back with you. You have no idea, especially on a pay-per-view week like this. Monday, August 12th, 2019, episode 212 of the Anik and Florian podcast. I'm like jumping out of my skin with UFC 241 coming up here in 6 days. Heading out to your neck of the woods, Southern California. Dinner at the Florian's Wednesday night in Venice. Invitation only. I did not get invited, but I might be crashing.
Always welcome at the Florian household. Come on.
Of course. That kid is too cute, man. You know, it's like, I don't say that too to everyone. I mean, I'm not going to call out my friends who have ugly children on the Anik and Florian podcast. But when I say that, you know, you guys should probably run it back. You guys make some really attractive babies. I imagine she's pretty smart as well. So bye week last week, my daughter Riley, who started third grade today, she turned 8 last Monday, and she was kind of adamant that we take the week off. So the UFC schedule kind of helped us out a little bit. There were some smaller shows, relatively speaking, respect to Valentina Shevchenko, of course, but the UFC schedule was forgiving, so we hit the reset button, and here we are. We are doing a primetime show on the East Coast, and I told my daughter she could come on the podcast tonight. So at some point, there's a chance that an 8-year-old's going to come in here, grab the headset, and do the show with Flo. So
yes,
just throwing that out there. Be ready. And speaking of being ready, before we get into Ray Longo and the UFC 241 selections and all of that, I want to go back to the Newark show because I've been dying to get your thoughts in a more extended forum on Colby Covington and the offensive mastery against Robbie Lawler. And if anyone could find a hole in this performance, I would imagine it would probably be somebody with an eye like yourself. But for me, sitting octagon side as the amateur that I am, watching that type of output with the 20-plus takedowns or whatever it was, 500-600 strikes, I was just in awe of his ability to sustain that over 25 minutes. And say what you want about him not really going for submissions or the punches being a little bit soft, but a lot of high-level fighters were coming to the support of Colby Covington's performance on August 3rd, and I was curious if you were sort of as blown away, at least as I was, 9 days ago.
You know, I was blown away as well. You know, I've gone back and forth with Colby on social media and things like that, and we've criticized each other, but not a whole lot to criticize in Colby Covington's performance there. Listen, he fought a guy in Robbie Lawler, one of the toughest guys to ever compete inside the octagon, a guy who can pose a lot of problems to anyone out there. He's fought every style of fighter out there, and he just did not have an answer to the onslaught that Colby Covington put on him that night. I mean, the other thing is this, is we hadn't seen Colby Covington in a while, and Colby is a vastly improved fighter since the last time we saw him. This guy has clearly been training, and he's been training a lot of striking because he looked way more comfortable on the feet. He was mixing things in. He threw every single strike in the book, and I tell you what, he probably landed it. His ability to mix things up, his ability to keep this insane amount of pressure on Robbie Lawler, I think Robbie was waiting for Colby to get tired or to stop throwing shots, and he never did. And Robbie just could never get comfortable in there and land enough hard shots to keep Colby away from him. It was an amazing performance. I was blown away by all aspects. The only thing that I could come up with to criticize Colby Covington was his inability to finish the rear naked choke. That was it. Listen, everyone's going to have a certain weakness in their game, certain things that they need to improve on. But I tell you what, Colby Covington has been training and been training hard. He looked much improved.
I'm glad you acknowledge the striking improvements and just the overall development, because we hear a lot of fighters say this, and I do the fighter calls on Tuesday, and sometimes when we don't do our fighter meetings on Thursday, I'll do 24, 26 fighter calls on Tuesday. And one of the things you continuously hear is fighters say, you don't even realize, like, in 6 months, in 8 months since you've seen me, I am just a totally different beast than I was. And Covington very much is still a developing fighter. Obviously, that is a scary proposition for the rest of this welterweight division. You know, Kamaru Usman is an interesting case because his performance against Tyron Woodley back in March was one of the most dominant championship performances that I've ever seen. And you sort of are thinking, man, what's it going to take to beat this guy? And then you see Colby go out and do this to Robbie Lawler over 25 minutes. And my appetite for that fight now between Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington is insatiable. I can't wait to see that fight. And hopefully, you know, November 2nd or whatever it is, Madison Square Garden, you know, it shall be done.
Yeah, listen, this is a guy who could definitely be wearing the belt, the actual belt in that division. Again, you look at Usman's skills and Colby Covington's skills. I thought Usman would be the guy who would be better on the feet. After seeing that performance against Robbie Lawler, for me, especially when it comes to skills from the outside, Colby is the better striker overall than Usman is. Is he the better wrestler? I don't know. He might even be better in that department as well. Both guys, as far as conditioning, strength, pressure, are about the same. Man, I can't wait to see that fight.
Well, congrats to Colby Covington, Jim Miller, and all the other winners in Newark, New Jersey. And then, of course, it was Uruguay this weekend. Valentina Shevchenko defends her belt against Liz Carmouche 50-45 times three. But I don't want to bury the lead, which was the fight of the night between Vicente Luque and Platinum Mike Perry. Split decision goes to Vicente Luque, whose winning streak I think is now six. But the tweet from Ken Flo, and certainly most of our listeners at this point have seen the fight. Mike Perry broke his nose in round three, a Luque knee. Easily worst nose break I've seen in a fight ever. This is at Kenny Florian on Twitter if you're not following. Perry and Luque are tough as hell. Nuff said. Right, so I did not watch the card live. I read your tweet, immediately went and watched the fight. And even though my memory is not like the go-to memory, I can assure you, that's the worst nose break I've ever seen in MMA competition, Ken Flo. It was smashed into his face. It wasn't there.
It was crazy. I haven't seen anything like it. I mean, the worst nose break before that fight against Mike Perry was, you know, the Rich Franklin one where Anderson Silva threw that knee from the clinch. And, you know, Brandon Vera's was pretty bad, I think, when he fought John Jones. But my goodness, man, that was just ridiculous. I mean, it was just gone. It looked like he was run over by a Mack truck or something. It was awful to see. And talk about toughness, dude. There are certain people that you literally need to kill to defeat. Mike Perry would be one of those guys. He's the kind of guy that if you shot him or stabbed him, he's going to continue to walk forward. Yeah. The dude's an absolute terminator. I thought he won the fight as well. I'm not sure I would call it a robbery necessarily. It was a close fight, but I thought that he won the fight. And my goodness, Mike Perry is an absolute stud. The damage to his face and his nose, I hope he's okay. I hope he's able to fight, you know, without that being a concern in the future. But dude, that was one of the worst nose breaks. It was the worst nose break I've ever seen, and one of the worst injuries I've seen inside the octagon.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but as Luque is squeezing the blood out of the nose, right, and it's like a faucet of blood on the canvas, right, the last thing Platinum Mike Perry's looking for, he's looking for a way out of the submission, not a way out of the fight. I think a lot of guys would be like, all right, my nose is like concaved up into my face. I should probably get some medical attention here. You may have just tap here, whatever, you know. But, of course, for Perry, you know, he thought he won that round and didn't get the credit for the takedown, or at least he thought he won the fight, as did many people out there. And I promised I wasn't going to have a conversation about scoring, even though there's so many things that we could talk about and we could do. But in a fight like this, Kenny, when people trot out the word robbery, you know, we both had it 2-1 Perry, but I think even you and I disagree on which rounds we gave him. And I think I watched it no commentary, uninterrupted this morning, with caffeine in my system, ready to go. And I'm sure if I watched it 10 times, I'd probably give it to Luque 4 of them. You know, I don't know. I just think it's very difficult. And TJ and I had a conversation off the air about half points and five judges. And there are a lot of different things we can do. But in a fight like this, it's very tough for Mike Perry, because not only does he now have this broken nose and maybe no contact for the rest of the year, which would be a hard pill for him to swallow. But now Luque's winning streak is six, right? And careers really do swing on outcomes like this. And I feel like at least if we had five human beings instead of three, you know, you lessen the margin for error at least a little bit. Because this is tough for Perry, right? Like, you beat Vicente Luque, you're in business. And now he's just got to deal with that split decision loss, I guess.
Dude, and that's the thing, you know, when judges make, you know, what I think is a bad decision in this case, it can totally make or break a person's career. And for Mike Perry, you know, this would have been a huge win, as you said. Vicente Luque now on this six-fight win streak. But, you know, for me, I thought Mike Perry definitely did enough. And on top of it, you know, to leave this fight in Uruguay with that kind of an injury, you know, at least he was given, the $50,000 bonus, which made me feel better. But, man, that was brutal and a tough way to learn a lesson, I guess, fighting in that country. But anyways, Vicente Luque is tough as nails as well. He did everything possible to win that fight as well. And it was a close fight. You can't say it was a robbery.
No, and Luque is a beast, and credit to him. But again, it's just all of a sudden for Mike Perry, instead of having won 3 of 4 with back-to-back wins over Alex Cowboy Oliveira and Vicente Luque, now he's lost 4 of 6 and 2 of his last 3. And, you know, again, though, for him, I think he's a matchmaker's dream, certainly resonates with fans, and I think he's going to get a lot of big fights, and people are going to want to fight him. And again, I think there are going to be top 15, top 10 opportunities for Mike Perry, regardless of that judge's decision. I think, to your point, the nose is maybe more something to keep an eye on as he tries to, you know, keep it going, because I think he's only 27, 28 years old. You know, a lot of fight left, in theory, in that dog. All right, one more thing here on Uruguay. And by the way, congratulations to Gilbert Burns making good on that welterweight fight there on the prelim portion. But Valentina Shevchenko did what many expected her to do as a minus 1,000 or so favorite, 50 to 45 times 3 against Liz Carmouche. Not a whole lot of action overall in the fight. I know some people were disappointed. You could certainly spin it on the Shevchenko side that here she is defending the belt for a second time in 3 months and deserves some credit for that. Any thoughts on Shevchenko exacting some revenge, so to speak, here in the rematch with Liz Carmouche?
Well, you know, she did a good job. I think for Shevchenko, you know, similar to a lot of the good counter fighters, they need someone to fight them for them to look good, right? Even Mayweather, right? Mayweather wasn't the guy later on in his career who you wanted to just run out and see. He needed someone to come forward for him to really shine. And if you're cautious against someone like a Mayweather, you know, you're not going to have the best fight. I'm not comparing Shevchenko to the level of a Mayweather just yet, but she is a counter fighter. And my point is that if you're a little timid and if you're not coming forward with a whole lot of aggression, you're not going to see the best that Shevchenko has to offer. And I think Carmouche was a little hesitant coming forward. Yeah. She really wasn't so aggressive. So we didn't see the most exciting of main events, John. And it was unfortunate, but still, Shevchenko is a much better fighter than the first time we saw them. I know Carmouche would like to you know, do a trilogy fight. I don't think that really is warranted. I would have liked to have seen a more aggressive Carmouche. I think Shevchenko is still a class or two above Carmouche at this stage of the game. Again, Shevchenko just remains one of the best female fighters in the world.
Yeah, there is some young talent at 125 pounds coming up. I don't know how much of it is ready for Shevchenko right now, but I do think that, you know, give it 12 or 18 months, that division is going to be in good shape, and Shevchenko is certainly going to get tested at least more than she was this weekend. So Ken Flo was a little bit delayed getting to his plush studio at his residence today, so we did tape the Ray Longo minute earlier. Here is my 15 minutes with Raymond Peter Longo.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Well, you know, there are not a lot of things I miss in life when I go on vacation, but Ray Longo is certainly one of them. The great Ray Longo now joins us, and when I say us, I say me and TJ DeSantis. So we're sort of taping the show out of order today, Ray. Because Ken Flo, there was an accident at Meraki BJJ. I guess somebody dislocated their elbow today. So Ken Flo is running a little bit late. So if we weren't going to go back and tape the top of the show, I would probably have some jujitsu joke. But I don't know the severity of the injury. And Ken Flo said it was pretty crazy. So you just got me today, unless you want to you know, probe TJ DeSantis. So you just got to take what you can get, I guess.
I'll take it, John. Did you have a good time with your family? First things first.
It was good, man. My daughter was adamant that we not do a podcast on her birthday last week on August 5th. So I obliged that command, and then we went to Marco Island and had a good time. And it was much needed, you know, the UFC stretch. It continues, obviously, this weekend. But 5 and 6 weeks was had me down for the count.
Beautiful. So,
very good. I mean, they're dislocating elbows at jiu-jitsu class. I hope you guys are keeping it safe at Longo Weidman MMA today.
I mean, I don't know. To miss something for a listen. We don't know the severity of the injury, but somebody dislocated. I mean, I've seen so many injuries. That's not stopping me from doing a podcast.
There you go. I like it. It took the words out of my mouth.
Doesn't he have a couple of lackeys he could send with that guy to the hospital?
Well, and as our radio producer, TJ DeSantis, would say, at least you got to text the producer. I mean, you know.
It's an elbow. I mean, did you see? I'll show you the video. Marab's toe, one time the bone was sticking through his toe.
Oh.
And the guy put on, I mean, he was running around the gym. He put on Instagram or one of those live feeds where he was running into the hospital to get it fixed laughing. I mean, this is what I'm dealing with down there. I mean, an elbow. This guy's bone was out through his toe.
Right. Marab, though, is just next level, right? I don't know that he's a great point of comparison because he's out of his mind. I mean, you've told stories about this guy. You know, forget the doctor. He just needs a bottle of Elmer's glue to sew up his face, you know?
If I tell you, I had him at least 2 or 3 times with one of the top plastic surgeons around, and he said he would go, and he glued it shut, and that was it.
I love him. Oh, the Georgians, baby.
Did you see Mike Perry's nose?
I did. You know, Ken Flo tweeted that it was the worst broken nose he had seen in MMA and, you know, smashed and dented like that. I think there's certainly an argument to be made that it was.
Yeah, there was a kid in the gym. He ran his nose into Sasaki's knee about 5 months ago.
Oh.
Worse or the same?
Oh, man. Are you there? That happened under your roof?
Oh, recently? Yeah.
Oh, man.
That happened. Yeah. That happened under my watch because, you know, it's a little language barrier.
I understand.
But crazy. No, that one I really was upset about because it should have never happened. But, you know, accidents happen. But I'll tell you what, I would have did the podcast. That's where I'm going with this. It's not about the injury. I'm doing the podcast.
I'm just hoping, John, in life, you have to prioritize. I'm telling you,
you
I'm just
prioritize.
Hoping when we re-rack the top of the show that TJ's backing me up and, you know. Anyway.
Hey, I've done a radio show without a voice before, and that was affecting me. I don't know what's wrong with Kenny. I mean, come on, man. If the guy's screaming in the background, that's atmosphere. We call it atmosphere in the biz.
I mean, really? Couldn't he have put the guy on the podcast for ratings?
I mean, whatever you got to do. Whatever you got to do is make the call time, backing things up. John, we're picking up nickels over here.
That guy, he puts that kid on the freaking podcast. We could pick up a couple of $5 bills.
you're right about that. So we have a lot of things to cover with you. Obviously, we were off last week. So I guess chief among them, if I'm looking at the last two shows with respect to Platinum Mike Perry and Vicente Luque that you just brought up, Colby Covington a couple weeks ago against Robbie Lawler. You know, there were people who were insinuating that these were pillow punches or whatever. I will just say, watching live from that seat, that type of offensive output, you know, 500-600 strikes and 20 takedowns, it seems not humanly possible over 25 minutes. I just didn't know if you had any thoughts on Colby Covington's win and, you know, big picture, how far he can take this thing.
No, big picture is the guy's a problem, and pillow punches are not. That's a lot of pillows coming at you.
Yeah.
You know, so eventually those pillows add up. But, no, his volume, his output is phenomenal. And, he's a problem. He's going to give a lot of people problems. I mean, the matchup I'd love to see would be him against Askren. That's the fight I would make.
Yeah.
I would love to see that fight.
Certainly they're going to make the fight with Kamaru Usman. And I guess for me, if I'm looking for a point of comparison with Covington or anyone out there who can match the pace and the pressure, maybe not in terms of the volume striking, but it's Usman. You know,
and that's the matchup. Another great fight. I mean, but Kobe, you got to take him serious at this point. I mean, he kind of ran over RDA, ran over Robbie. I don't know. That's, you know, he's got a gas tank, man. You know, he's got a gas tank and a half. I hope it's all on the up and up. But if it is, man, I give it up to him. There's a kid I have in the gym now, Ryan Petrovich, lost to Covington by a point in the Nationals. And I asked him, I said, how was his, he said, same guy. He said, he's a goer, nonstop. He's got a great, whatever genes he's got a great genes to keep going. So,
yeah.
Power to him. You know, I don't like his antics, but you got to admire him as a fighter.
Right. And there are guys, too, like Gregor Gillespie, not far from you, who just have that extra gear, particularly on the big nights or on the big stages. They really have that extra gear. But, you know, it was interesting. Kobe Covington said after the fight, maybe even in the post-fight interview, or maybe it was after the fact, but that he knew from the time he was a little kid in sports that he had this third lung. So, certainly looks natural to me, you know, but I can understand given the output when you have guys like Daniel Cormier going on Twitter and saying, man, I can't even believe that a guy can, you know, mix the striking and the takedowns and sustain that type of offensive output over 25 minutes. I mean, you had the best guys in the sport acknowledging this effort, you know?
No, it's a bit, John, it's impressive. Whether you like him, you don't like him, you hate him. That's freaking impressive, period. That's it, you know?
All right, a couple other things. Ally Quinta versus Dan Hooker verbally agreed to for UFC 243, October 5th, Melbourne, Australia. What can you tell us, Ray? What can you tell us?
What do you want to know?
Are you looking at flights to Melbourne?
Yes, I am.
Yes! Because, if I got to go that far, at least join me.
You know why I said that? Because when I hang up the phone, I get all my people say, no, he said, he didn't get nothing out of him. I want to just save you the extra breaths after we hang up the phone. You're welcome. But,
exciting.
I do believe they might be waiting on something signed, but as far as I know, the fight's going on.
So how do you feel about this this travel? You're going to suck it up, obviously, but how do you feel about the long flight?
You know what, man? You got to remember, we have Mizuki is fighting in China at the end of the month, and I had to send somebody else. But, for Ally Quinta, I would actually do anything, and any pain would be no pain for that kid.
No, of course.
Not that I'm looking forward to it, but it is what it is. That guy
is your initial thought, though?
I dropped that on the plane for that guy.
Of course. No, I no doubt about it. You know, I mean, I don't even know him that well, and I'd run through a wall for him, right, as an MMA fan. Is your initial thought like, oh, man, October 18th in Boston just sounds a lot closer? Or are you just fight, big stadium show?
All those thoughts are running.
Yeah, of course.
October's looking and then Frivola's trying to get on the Melbourne card also. But then he's thinking of Tampa, which I think is in between that. So I don't even know. October's crazy right now, and we'll see how it plays out, but I don't know. That's a crazy month.
It's good to be busy, and that's a good fight for Al, and that's going to be a great crowd for him to perform in front of, so we're excited for that. A couple other things before I let you go. You acknowledge some women's fighter on Instagram as like a best friend or someone in your life. And I don't believe in the 4-year life of this podcast we've ever even talked about this woman. Whose birthday was it? Who is this fighter that has been somebody that's been right by your side over the years?
Oh, wow. I mean, I'm surprised about that. I would love to give her a shout out. Jenny Nadell.
Yeah.
She literally is the heart and soul of the gym. She's got one or two fights left in her, she's a kickboxing champ, and, she turned 41, and she's got maybe two fights to go, and then she's going to retire. But, no, without her, I would have never lost the weight. She's there for me every freaking day. Stays on top of me, makes sure I'm working out. And, like, again, I kind of owe her my life at this point. So I can't say enough about that kid. She's does everything for everybody in the gym. And, she's all business. She trains every day, and she 100%. Stays on top of me and doesn't let me breathe. So
that's amazing.
I love her.
I know.
No,
there
no,
was
really great.
There.
Really great. You would absolutely love her. She's just a great person, and she fights with a lot of spirit and heart, and she's awesome, man. She's getting better as she gets older, and I didn't think it would be possible.
Yeah. Well, I'm 41, so God help us all. But that's nice of you to give her a shout out. And now that you bring up her name, you have acknowledged her over the years on the show. So good stuff there. All right, before I let you go, and we will get a DC Stipe prediction out of you, so you can certainly marinate on that while I ask you about Aljamain Sterling. All right, it is 6:10 p.m. Eastern time, Monday, August 12th right now. Where is Aljamain Sterling? Where are you? Are you at the gym right now?
No, I'm actually home. As soon as I hang up the phone, I get in the car and I run to the gym because I have to teach a 7 o'clock class. But Aljamain Sterling, I'm going to say, is teaching the class. He's got the 6 o'clock MMA class.
And I think, you know, I might have even seen him on a boat doing some celebrity thing as his profile continues to increase. But no, I bring up Aljo just because, like, what is his mentality right now? Is he strategically waiting for a fight with a belt? I mean, Henry's going to be out for the rest of the year. You hearing anything on Aljo? He's got to be starting to want to scratch that itch a little bit, I would think.
I got to say, I'm hearing nothing on Aljo again.
Yeah.
Weeks ago, my advice was you earned a title shot. I would wait for it.
I agree.
Or at least an interim title shot. I think that's the way it is. But he's, you know, he is in the gym, not fully, but he's, you know, he worked, definitely worked, had a great workout Friday. And, you know, when he teaches the class, he participates in the class. So that's we have a really great, there's a lot of young guys now. So we have a great MMA class Monday and Wednesday. He does a fantastic job with, and he gets his work in. So, you know, he's staying active, but not killing it. Like, you know, not going crazy, but he's one of those guys. He's always in the gym. He doesn't really take too much time off. You know what I mean? So,
He's the last guy I would ever worry about. And that is not at all the context I would bring it up. And I just think he's in an interesting position where it feels like the title shot is earned. You know, is he expecting some Piotr Jan name to come down the pipe? Does he want to get one in? I mean, I feel like a name like Dominic Cruz, for example, is a big enough. I'm just saying that's
it would have to be something like that.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So that it would have to be something that makes sense in some way, you know, bang for your buck, gatekeeper that, you know, like a big name or something like that, or a title. I really think he worked hard. He came back from that Marlon Moraes knockout. I think he proved to who he is, and I think for these guys to get a shot at the title is huge, and I think he earned it, and I think he deserves it, you know.
Kenny Florian just joined us, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Florian, yeah, just joined the program. Ken Flo, is that you, Ken?
Wow, Ken. Kenny, John said somebody broke their toenail. You couldn't make the show.
All right. I don't think Kenny can hear us, so we're gonna move on. Before we let you go, Ray, Stipe, Miocic, Daniel Cormier. Cormier, slight favorite right now. Who do you like in the heavyweight championship rematch coming up Saturday night?
I like to qualify my opinion. I love both of these guys. I like both of these guys, but Stipe, you know, he's been at the gym. He's a great dude.
Right.
I know what this means to him, so I think I'm going with Stipe.
So that's just a heart selection, right? I mean, that's basically you're not going to come on the airwaves and pick against Stipe.
Hey, listen, I don't care if I win, lose money.
No, I know.
I go with my people, man. Stipe's my guy. I love the guy. He's always gracious. He's always just a gentleman every time I see him. And again, he's been at the gym, and obviously he's close to Vellante. So I'm going with Stipe, man. You know, and I love DC, man. He's a great guy. He does a lot of work with the kids. I always love talking to him. He's inspirational. He's a great ambassador. You know, all of that stuff. They're both really super nice guys in different ways. But, you know, Stipe, you know, I'm closer to. So that's where I'm going.
And it's not like you're depending
on. I think Stipe makes the adjustment, John. I mean, this means a lot to him, man. He's, I think there's certain guys that, you know, I don't know.
He wants this one badly.
Yeah, this is an exciting fight. I mean, you're looking forward to it. In a long time, this is one of those fights I think a lot of people, for the first time, are really looking forward to.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to see how it plays out.
Big stuff.
All right, well, thank you for the selection. The thing is, it's not like you are so dependent upon your Anakin Florian podcast paycheck that you need to really pick winners You know, it's, you got enough irons in the fire. You don't need this money. We know that.
Hey, listen. Hey, John. You know.
All right, buddy. Hey, have a great night at the gym. Thank you for your time. Sorry you had no Ken Flo this week. We'll talk to you next Monday, and we'll recap UFC 241, buddy.
Awesome. Look forward to it. Take it easy, TJ.
Bye, Ray.
All right, there he is here on the Anik and Florian podcast. All right, TJ DeSantis, 5-8 on the year. Kind of mailed it in last week. This fighter makes his 7th UFC appearance Saturday night. He goes for a 3rd consecutive win when he faces Jakar Close. Pronunciation of the week for Monday, August 12th. TJ DeSantis, of who am I speaking?
The pressure is on here because I've called 2 of his fights before he got to the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Well, here, if it makes you feel any better, sorry to cut you off
during
your segment. I have called at least one of his fights in which I have butchered his name without the presence of an audio file that we have now. So I'm just going to throw that out there that I've screwed this up on a UFC broadcast before.
All right. So I made the mistake of calling him Christos over and over again, but it is technically not correct. It is Christos Iagos.
And you are 6-8. I mean, just absolutely nailing it. TJ, ready to go. You like the late start time today, I think. I think you like the late start time.
I'm firing on all cylinders and 6 energy drinks, so we're good.
All right, well, what I need is Ian Parker to like this late start time. Let's get to the picks. UFC 241, Cormier versus Miocic 2. Big one beckons this Saturday night, Anaheim, California. Home game for Ken Flo. Let us get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finish fights! I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, so Team Anik led Team Florian 103-100 heading into UFC Newark. Of course, no picks last week for the Uruguay show. We were off. So 2 picks on the Newark card. Both of these hacks picked Robbie Lawler to beat Colby Covington. I'm just kidding. I love you guys. But you both did have Jim Miller. Ian Parker had Jim Miller by submission. Missed on the round, but that's a winning week for Ian and Team Anik by default. 2-1 overall lead, 105-101 as we head into the monster that is UFC 241. And Ian Parker now joins us live. Ian, before we get to the UFC 241 selections, I want to congratulate you not on the main event challenge, but a big weekend in the sports book for you. Thousands of dollars. We will not specify how much. The question is, what type of swing? I don't know if you can even answer this, but the Vicente Luque fight, I think, was a big swing for you, at least in a parlay or two. That was a swing fight for you, and it went your way. Is that accurate?
That one, and I'll be completely transparent for the whole Twittersphere that will jump all over me, and also the Enrique Barzola fight as well. I had Enrique as well. Yeah, you know what? I went back and forth in that fight in regards to betting it, and I'll be honest, I also had Perry straight up as a hedge situation, very small hedge. You know, that fight obviously made me sweat, but hey, sometimes the split decision goes your way and you cash really well and you're able to pay for your kid's school for the year. And that's just how it goes.
It really is amazing. Like, you're not even messing around. Like, I'm telling my wife, I'm like, honey, you don't understand, right? Like, we were paying preschool tuitions here, honey. Do you understand? Do you understand, honey? You know? Doesn't get it. All right, we got to move on here. UFC 241. It's almost bedtime here on the East Coast. This will be the first prelim you see on ESPN. And when South Shore Sport Fighting is represented, you know we're picking this fight, Ken Flo. Bantamweight division, Manny Bermudez, 14-0. He faces the 12-1-1 Casey Kenny. Bermudez minus 145. Ian Kenny, the plus 115 underdog. What do you think about this one here on ESPN, Ian Parker?
You know what? Casey Kenny obviously, performed nicely against Ray Borg. I did not think he won that fight, however. Again, Ray Borg on short notice. That's a tall task. However, I think he's running into a difficult matchup for him in Manny here. Manny, I think, has got more than capable striking and will definitely have the advantage in the submission department. And I see it going this way. You know, Borg, you know, obviously, we know the type of fighter he is. He's scrappy, good on the ground. You know, I don't know how much he's evolved over the years, but Manny is a very aggressive fighter, and I think that this might be a little too much too soon. I see a submission win for Manny here, and I think that's the way it's going to go.
All right, Ian Parker likes Manny Bermudez to move to 4-0 in the UFC with 4 submissions. So, Ken Flo, I would say right now, other than maybe you, Calvin Kattar is the best fighter Massachusetts has produced thus far. He, of course, gets a chance to prove it coming up October 18th against beating Magomed Sharipov. Very excited about that fight. But Bermudez certainly has a lot of hype, Kenny. I think some of it was sort of muted when he missed weight so significantly against Benito Lopez. I think there is an asterisk next to that win. But your thoughts on Bermudez and ultimately the fight he's got in front of him here against the pretty accomplished Casey Kenny.
Yeah, you know, listen, hopefully he learned his lesson against Lopez. I think that he's still maturing as a fighter. You look at his record, it's unbelievable what he's accomplished. Not only is he undefeated over the course of his mixed martial arts career, but I think he has like one or two decisions only. The rest are all finishes. So
right.
Talk about a dude who finishes fights. I love it. I love his style. And I do think he should win this fight. By a finish. I wouldn't be surprised if he does go out there and submit Kenny at some point.
Manny Bermudez, 11 career wins by submission, one by TKO. Exactly right. Two career wins by decision. And any time, I don't care what your strength of schedule is, right? When all of a sudden you're looking up at 14-0 with that many submissions, right? See a lot of 4-0 with four submissions. You don't see a lot of 14-0 with 11 submissions. All right, next fight here, guys, 135 pounds as well. And, man, does this speak to the depth of this fight card. This is a prelim, folks. Corey Sandhagen, minus 180. Rafael Assuncao, plus 150. So, Ian, number 9 is favored to beat number 3 here. Sandhagen, 4-0 in the UFC. Split decision win against John Lineker, April 27. Your thoughts on Sandhagen against an obviously very credentialed guy in Rafael Assuncao?
Yeah, this one, interesting fight. You know, again, we have Assuncao, who has been competitive for a really long time. He's getting up there in age, and we're seeing Corey Sandhagen kind of, I think, peaking really at the right time. Again, split decision win over Lineker. Tough fight. This one, I'm going to go Corey Sandhagen. You know, I've been speaking to a lot of people, trying to do a lot of tape work on this, and I just feel like Assuncao is not going to be able to handle the pace and the output, especially in a 3-round fight against Corey. I just think the athleticism is there. And I think he's a new type of fighter we're going to see in this weight class. So I'm going Corey Sandhagen.
All right, Corey Sandhagen, minus 180, the pick to click for Ian Parker. Ken Flo Assuncao, 11-3 in the UFC. No title fights yet for him, despite some big wins. Obviously, Marlon Moraes, TJ Dillashaw, Aljamain Sterling. He's 37 years old. I think if he wins here, he's right back in the mix, sort of defends that number 3 ranking, hands Sandhagen his first UFC loss. The question is, can he do it?
I'm a big fan of Sandhagen. I think that this guy has a lot of potential, and this is kind of one of those fights that is a defining moment for him. If he's able to beat someone like we may have a guy who could be a future champion in this sport. Win or lose, I still think he could be a champion of this sport. Right. But I think he will get there that much quicker if he's able to beat someone like Assuncao. Now, I like his footwork a lot better. I love his movement, his ability to mix things up. He's not too shabby on the ground either. I still think Assuncao should have the advantage on the mat if it goes there. I think Assuncao is one of those guys who can both hit very hard and he can slow you down with leg kicks. And I think that's what he's going to have to do here against Sandhagen. This is a tough one for me, but I'm going to go the other way. I think Assuncao, with his experience, is able to pull off a very close decision win here.
Fascinating fight. And I see a ton of upside if you're Hoffy, right?
Yes.
You know, to have this Sandhagen fight, to be able, even though you're the number 3 ranked guy in the world, but to hand him his first UFC loss. And again, people talk about Sandhagen in very lofty terms, right? So we'll see if he can back it up this weekend against Rafael Assuncao. All right, next fight here in the middleweight division. This is the pay-per-view opener. We will have Ken Flo lead us here. Ian Heinisch, minus 185 against Derek Brunson, who is plus 155. Kenny, Heinisch, all the rage right now, 2-0 in the UFC, couple unanimous decision wins over two very tough Brazilians, in my mind, Cesar Fajeda, Shoeface, Antonio Carlos Jr. Brunson on the other side, 15 UFC fights, many against the best of the best. I think this would be a fun fight to have action on, Kenny Florian. I think the masses want to know, though, which way is the flow going?
Jeez, you know, this is a tough one also because of Derek Brunson's inconsistency in the UFC. You never know what Derek Brunson you're going to get.
Right.
I think Ian Heinisch, one thing is for sure, he is consistent. He's a guy who's always going to show up and fight to the damn end. This guy is tough as nails. He finds a way to pull off these wins. I think he's grinded out a lot of wins in the UFC. Here's the problem. I think style-wise, I don't know how well he matches up against Derek Brunson as far as his ability to kind of grind out a win against a wrestler like Derek Brunson. Derek gets a little wild sometimes himself. He can get caught, you know, makes a lot of mistakes out there. But I don't know if Heinisch is the guy who really can take advantage of Brunson on the feet. I like Derek Brunson here as the underdog bet.
Oh, man, people are going to be salivating with Ken Flo throwing out all these underdog selections. All right, Ian Parker. So Brunson, 10-5 in the UFC. The five losses, I will do this very quickly. Yoel Romero. See, I had a lot of time to prepare today. You know, we go 6 p.m. Eastern start time. I got all day. So Romero fight back in, I think, 2014, Kenny. I think we called it. He had success in that fight. The Robert Whittaker fight is an outlier still for me, just a suicide mission. I know that was against the undisputed champion, but just a weird approach from Brunson. Anderson Silva lost by decision, UFC 208. Many thought he won that fight. And then, of course, Ian, the recent first-round knockouts against Jacare and Israel Adesanya. Overall, though, good body of work. Kenny certainly sees the value on that side. Your thoughts, Ian, on Ian Heinisch and Derek Brunson this weekend?
Well, number one, Ian Heinisch has a phenomenal first name, so I just want to give him credit on that. So right away, he gets a quick check off on that box. But I actually am going to go opposite of Kenny, not because I know everyone loves the Ian Heinisch prospect, but in general, I actually think this is a bad matchup for Derek Brunson. I don't think Derek Brunson is the same guy that we think he is, where he's this big-time wrestler that uses that to threaten his power punching. I think it's really gone the other way. I think he's someone who thinks he's a knockout artist now and has wrestling to fall back on. Listen, in the last fight with Heinisch versus Shootface, we all assumed that Heinisch was going to get, you know, tooled in the jiu-jitsu department, and instead he dominated on the ground against a guy who, in my opinion, is way better off his back than Brunson. I do think Heinisch actually has the better technical striking. Brunson is just kind of a one-hitter quitter power guy. You know, his fight against Theodoro was, you know, he did whatever he could do, I guess, from someone who was running as much as Elias was in that fight. But in all these other fights, remember, we go back to the whole George Gurgel thing. Wrestling got you to where you are. You get a couple of knockouts and you forget how to set everything up. I think Heinisch has got a very good opportunity here. I don't think he wastes it against a good name like Brunson. And I'm going to go with the favorite, Heinisch, here. I think he's a real legit prospect of the division. I think Brunson, unfortunately, is just relies too much on his striking. And against a guy like Heinisch, that's not going to work. So I'm going Ian Heinisch.
Excellent analysis. Well prepared. I love the two disagreements early because we have seven total selections today. To that end, we move it along. Featherweight, Sadiq Youssef, minus 350. Gabriel Benitez, plus 275. Today, I did see some movement, minus 285 and plus 245 for Mowgli. So some movement there. You know, I think it's probably sharp money, Ian. I mean, he's AKA trained. He's coming into his own, 29 years old, wins in three of his last four. He's even getting the red corner treatment here against Sadiq Youssef. Obviously, Youssef is highly touted, deserves the distinction as the betting favorite. You see any value on Gabriel Mowgli Benitez, you know, in that plus 275 range, Ian?
I just think that Youssef is that next breed in this weight class of knockout guys that actually are technical strikers who know how to use their hands without having to get into a brawl, and he's really good at keeping the fight upright. You know, if this fight stays standing, this is going to be a really, really long night. I like Youssef here. I don't know if the odds are too, I think they're a little too heavy. I don't think he should be that big of a favorite based on his last fight, but he deserves to be the favorite. I do see him winning here. I don't see the value in the underdog. I think there's other fights if you want to roll the dice on an underdog, but here, I just think the striking is light years of a difference, and I'm going with the favorite here 100%.
Translation, Ian Parker paying that preschool tuition. We'll have like six or eight parlays on the board, and Sadiq Youssef at minus 300 or otherwise is probably going to be omnipresent in those parlays. Is that fair to say?
That's pretty fair.
All right. Ken Flo, Youssef got a good test, I thought, in Shaymon Moraes in Philadelphia back in March. Yes. Certainly passed it 2-0 in the UFC. Not as experienced on the octagon stage as Gabriel Benitez, but you can understand why Ian and others really like Sadiq Youssef in this spot this weekend.
Well, I like Sadiq Youssef as well. I think Gabriel Benitez is a tremendous kicker. I think he has a lot of power in that department, knows how to use it, knows how to mix things up. He is tough as hell. But I think Sadiq Youssef is just too has too many weapons as a striker, moves much better, knows how to mix things up and keep you guessing out there. I'm going with Sadiq Youssef for the win.
All right, a couple plays there on Super Sadiq. Oh, you got to love saying Super Sadiq. All right, now we get to a featured bout in the middleweight division. What a fight. What a fight. What a matchup this is. Yoel Romero, minus 170. Paulo Costa, plus 140. Kenny, I'm just praying all goes well during fight week. You know, it's been more than a year since we've seen either of these guys. Costa still undefeated, 12-0, 4 in the UFC with as many knockouts. But he is the underdog here against the soldier of God, Yoel Romero. Of course, he was in that classic with Robert Whittaker. Split decision loss for him last June, UFC 225. Huge fight here, Ian Parker. I think I'm going to stand up because I'm just so excited for these selections. The question is, Paulo Costa or Yoel Romero for you?
Well, just to let you know, I'm always standing during this show. There's no sitting
How
for me.
You
could even ask Kenny on the last Instagram Live. I don't sit.
Well,
enough.
It's interesting because when you call a football game, you're standing the whole time. And when you call a mixed martial arts event, at least the way we do it, you'd be in somebody's way if you're doing that, you know?
I'm only 5'7". If they put one of these tall celebrities behind me, they're fine. Yeah. All right, so Romero Costa, I just hope that we do not take USADA into consideration. I think there should be no drug testing for this fight. Let these guys just do it. Because let's be honest with ourselves, no one looks like that when they're not in fight camp. And these guys look like this year-round. I think they both have gotten more shredded since all the situations and stuff. And Romero is, what, $27 million richer from somehow proving it was a tainted supplement. So whoever his attorney is, please call me. That's amazing. Number one. Number two, I actually don't think this is as close to the matchup as people really think. I think Romero has such a heavy upside here in this fight. I love that the odds are, what, a minus 155. I just checked about an hour ago. Here's the deal. Costa's level of competition has not been that strong. And look who Romero has fought. You know, Rockhold, Whittaker, Weidman, you know, the list goes on. And he's done the dance at five rounds twice. Costa has not done that yet, and he hasn't really fought a guy. Who is his biggest level of competition? Uriah Hall? You know, this is a huge step up in competition. This is one of those times where it's really timing is everything, and this is why Costa's getting an opportunity at a big name. I don't think he deserves it yet. I think Romero is going to have the better cardio, more explosive. He doesn't have to go five rounds. He's got three rounds here, and his wrestling is light years ahead of Costa. Unless Costa lands a big shot, which of course is possible, I think Romero has all the tools to make this work. I love Yoel Romero at this price. All day, Yoel Romero.
Costa did lose an amateur fight on season 3 of The Ultimate Fighter Brazil, split decision over three rounds to Marcio Alexandre Jr. UFC stoppages, Gareth McClellan, Olawale Bamboche, Johnny Hendricks, and Uriah Hall, which was the most recent one at UFC 226. Ken Flo, Yoel Romero, 42 years of age. He's one of those 1977 guys. Your thoughts on Romero in this spot against Paulo Costa?
Ian, what I think you were trying to say is you've never seen someone so ripped in the octagon since Kenny Florian. That's what you wanted
there
to
you
say,
go.
I'm sure. But listen,
totally.
I think, yeah, Paulo Costa, I think, yeah, is taking this fight way too soon for my liking. I like Yoel Romero here. I think that his ability to stay patient, his ability to utilize those long-range weapons and keep Costa on the outside when he wants to win those exchanges from long range and then get to the clinch, take him down whenever he wants. He's just such a tremendous double threat against anyone in that division. This is a guy who could very well be the champion in the middleweight division. Paulo Costa is an explosive guy. He's very fast. He's very tough. He's got a great chin. He's very good at pressuring you. But Romero just has too much experience, is too well-rounded, too skilled. I think Romero gets it done here.
Can't wait to see it. Excited to see what Paulo Costa can do with the opportunity. This is the type of fight where if I wasn't working and I was home, it has like a Super Bowl-type intensity for me. I mean, the whole card obviously does, but standing up, just a bunch of holy shits, and just sometimes you you think, man, it'd be fun to have a couple drinks and watch them shut the door behind Yoel Romero and Paulo Costa. But we'll try to be sober for you Saturday night on pay-per-view. Co-headliner, Anthony Showtime Pettis, slight favorite, minus 120. Nate Diaz, minus 110. I know there has been some movement, but Pettis still holding as a slight favorite as we sit here on Monday night of Fight Week. Men, we'll need the round, the method of victory here. Ken Flo, it'll be a near 1,100-day layoff for Nate Diaz. I'm not sure how much that matters, but how do you think it goes for Nate here and obviously a big return spot Saturday night?
You know, the one thing that really concerns me with Nate in this fight against Anthony Pettis are the leg kicks. I think really it was the leg kicks that won in the fight against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. I'm referring to Pettis, sorry. Pettis' ability to work those kicks is what eventually set up that big shot. I think it was slowing down Wonderboy, and this is exactly what you need to do against Nate Diaz. Now, it's going to be much more of a factor against someone like Nate Diaz because both of them are southpaws. I think what Nate has going for him is the fact that he is able to pressure him. He's going to be much longer than Anthony Pettis. I think he's going to be much bigger. I think he's got to expect those leg kicks to be coming. I would imagine that Nate Diaz would be able to adapt to that at this point in his career and be able to walk down Anthony Pettis, get on the inside, beat him up from the clinch, take the fight to the ground where I think he would have a big advantage. But he's got to stay in boxing range against Anthony Pettis. If he can do that, cut off the cage, he can win this fight. If Anthony Pettis is able to diffuse that energy, circle around the octagon, utilize those leg kicks and slow down Nate Diaz that way and get that done early in the fight, he's got a great chance of winning that fight. However, I'm going to go with Nate Diaz here. He needs this fight. He needs this win to put him back and get him another big fight. You know, I think he's a big superstar right now in this sport. He's been taking his time off, I think, in the right way. And I think Nate Diaz will get the win.
How do you not put that content behind a paywall, Ken Flo? If you're Kenny Florian, right, you put that behind a paywall. You're fucking throwing that shit out there for free on the Anakin Florian podcast. You do better than that. All right, so you have Nate Diaz. You will get the underdog credit, obviously, because that is the betting line as we sit here. Do you have a method of victory or a round you would like for,
sorry,
for Nathan Diaz?
I'm going to go with decision.
Okay, Nate Diaz. Decision. Got it. All right, Ian Parker. So two absolute savages here. Fan favorites both. Just four fights for Nate Diaz since 2013. The last non-McGregor fight for Nate Diaz, Michael Johnson in 2015, obviously looked outstanding. And it's still his 24th UFC appearance. I mean, he could easily, Ian, be in that Jim Miller territory had he been more active of late. You look on the other side, Anthony Pettis has fought seven times since we last saw Nate Diaz. Co-headliner, huge fight Saturday night, Pettis or Diaz for UIP.
Well, first I want to point out, number one, anyone on the internet that listens to this show and sends me a meme of Kenny Florian on Yoel Romero's body, I will get a free pick. That's number one.
That's
number
amazing.
I will
how
definitely
would you tell
do
the
that,
difference?
But you got.
How would you tell the difference?
Yeah. I have a great answer. It's gonna be the eyebrows. That's the difference. Eyebrows and the haircut. Only way we're going to know the difference. If your eyebrows are on fleek like Kenny Florian, that's the only way we're going to know.
That's
number one. Number two, I want to point out that 2 weeks ago, Kenny gave me shit about winning by decision. And yet, I think the last three main event challenges, you keep choosing guys to win by decision.
Hey,
come on, bro.
All right.
What's going on here?
I got to do it.
It's all right. I understand. All right. So this fight is so tricky for the obvious reasons. One, Nate Diaz being out 3 years, does that really matter with a Diaz? They're cardio machines. I will tell you the biggest thing I don't like about this fight for Diaz, that it's at 170. Because Pettis has been sitting at 170 for a little bit, and look at the level of competition he's fought between the Tony Fergusons, between the Wonder Boys. You know, he's fighting guys that are essentially champions, title contenders in two different weight classes, and winning, losing, he's kind of putting it together. I don't know if cardio would be really an issue for Pettis in a three-round fight. I don't see that being the case. I understand what Kenny's saying with the boxing, but I don't know if Nate is going to be able to do the volume that Tony Ferguson did to Anthony Pettis. Did he make the right adjustments? Was that not a big enough test of a similar fighter, but Ferguson's got more power? This is so hard to pick. I also think that Anthony Pettis may even try and take Nate down. I do think Nate's the better jiu-jitsu practitioner, but Pettis is no slouch on the ground. I don't think he gets submitted from the guard. You know, the leg kicks, he has to use them. You know, follow the blueprint of what, what Josh Thompson did. Man, this is really hard. I'll tell you, John, on a betting standpoint, unless you're up going into this fight, I just want to sit back and watch this.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
With you because this is there's no comfortable way to even do this. There should be – the only reason why that Diaz is an underdog is because of the three-year hiatus, you know? I'm just going to – I'm going to go opposite of Kenny just because it's fun betting against him and picking against him. But I do think Anthony Pettis, being the more active fighter, fighting this level of competition for the last, let's just say, 3 years that Nate hasn't been there, I think he's fought got better strikers than Nate. In the three-round competition, I'm not worried about the cardio. I think Anthony Pettis is going to leg kick his way to a decision, Kenny Florian.
Right, Anthony, showtime.
Okay. All right.
Pettis by decision. I kind of had an inkling that if we let Ken Flo lead there, that Ian Parker was going to go the other way regardless. And we appreciate that. Three disagreements thus far. Which brings us to the main event, the UFC Heavyweight Championship rematch. Ken Flo's going Cormier. It's just a question of the round or the method, and that's okay. Cormier's minus 150. Stipe Miocic, plus 120. We will need the round and the method of victory. You heard Ray Longo earlier in the program, if you listen to the whole show. He likes Stipe because he's his friend, Ian, but he also just feels like Stipe wants this one in the worst way, and not that other fights haven't had his focus, but that this one seems to really have his focus. Your thoughts on Stipe running it back here with the champion, DC? Who wins? How do they get it done?
Man, excuse me. This everyone seems to have friends in this fight along the whole way. There's loyalties every which way. I'm going to try and stay non-biased. I honestly don't know where Stipe actually wins this fight. I think Daniel Cormier, I think, will have the better cardio. I think he's the better wrestler. Obviously, the power has transitioned. I don't really know what Stipe learned from that last fight other than Daniel literally saying whenever he broke off the clinch, his hands were down, and DC just said, I'm going to swing, and if it hits, I'm good. And that was literally it. Outside of that, if you go back and watch the fight, DC was landing that jab over and over again. I just think people sometimes don't, they look at DC's body and they kind of, you know, don't understand how quick he is. He might have one of the highest level fight IQs to ever touch the cage. And I'm assuming Kenny will probably attest to that. You know, I think DC is just too smart to take a fight like this, not seeing where he can win as it potentially being his last fight. So I'm going to go DC. I'm going to say he wins by third round TKO. I think he's going to bring this fight to the ground. I think Stipe is going to get tired. I don't think it ends by knockout the way it did last time. I just, like I said, I think DC is going to be smart, do what he's got to do, eventually get this fight, take the back, beat him up, and that's where I see it go. That's where I see it going. So I'm going DC round three TKO.
Yeah, don't let the frame fool you. I mean, this is just such an elite athlete, and I'm glad you acknowledge the fight IQ. So DC, Ken Flo, obviously giving Stipe, granting Stipe the rematch. And of course, Miocic, as accomplished as any UFC heavyweight prior when it comes to his title reign, wanted to wait out more than a year to make sure that his next fight was a championship opportunity. Your thoughts on what Ian had to say, and if you think Stipe can make the requisite adjustments and make this fight any closer or more competitive than the last meeting.
Well, you know, you mentioned me picking DC, and I am, and I will. I always will. But I tell you what, this fight against Stipe makes me a little extra nervous. Stipe really can crack. He's a very good striker. I think he's underestimated in that department. It's not like the guy can't wrestle either. And when you look at them side by side, man, I mean, and you go back to their first meeting, Stipe was significantly larger than Daniel Cormier. Now, that's not something that we've seen before. I mean, obviously Cormier is a guy who's used to going against taller, larger opponents. But it's a factor when you're taking shots to the dome. That size, that power really does make a difference. And Stipe is very fast. So it's a fight that concerns me. However, the types of fights that concern me most when you're facing someone like Daniel Cormier are the guys that can kick very well. The guys that are very tricky with their feet, because I don't know if Daniel reacts to kicks as well as he does punches. He can level change. He knows how to mix things up. He can get to the inside. He can clinch you. He's very good with his dirty boxing. He's good with his shots as well. Gets his weight behind his shots extremely well. And Stipe isn't that guy who can kick extremely well. At least we haven't really seen too much of that. And because of that, I think Daniel Cormier will get a win, let's say around the third round TKO.
All right, DC, third round technical knockout on both sides.
Time out.
You said third round as well?
Same thing I did.
You said third round as well.
TKO.
See, I wasn't even listening to you.
Stick to your decision, Romero. Stick to your decision.
I didn't even listen to you. All right, let's do second
maybe you
round.
Well, you know what, John?
Who's talking?
I get out.
All right, let's go second
something?
Round.
Yep, I got it for the record. Right. Ian, okay. Ian, you got a hot microphone. The floor is yours, sir. What do you got?
Listen, I'm just saying I had DC – round three TKO. Kenny, I feel like if you listen to me more, you'd probably be winning this competition because I'm sitting here giving you the respect of your breakdowns and picking opposite of you because I'm going to beat you again this week. The least you could do is pick a different round. Come on.
I just zone out. You start talking, I zone out. If I listen to you, I'd be making a lot of money. I'd be a rich man.
All you gotta do is
follow me on Instagram and Twitter. You'll probably
there you go. Yeah, there you go. At Parker Cage Hero, by the way, if you are interested in tracking Ian Parker's every move. All right, Ian, 20 seconds.
Hey, more like Cage Zero. I'm just saying.
Oh, wait a minute, John.
You know I was waiting for Cage TJ Zero. To pop in. I was waiting, TJ. I was trying to be nice, and I was waiting. But that last Twitter post that you tossed up there, I don't know who you're calling a zero right now. Nobody in the world gets a discount on their book cameo. At book cameo has decided that likely no one will ever book me. It's true. I'm Cage Zero.
Hey, how many Twitter followers do you have?
All right. Hey, I'm going to stop this down here. I got to get
not
between
as much
you guys.
As, not as much as the money I made this past weekend. Boom!
Allegedly.
Ian, I need 20 seconds from you before you go on Colby Covington because I just am trying to provide some context for that offensive performance. Ken Flo gave us his thoughts on the top of the show, but you know, to see someone like Daniel Cormier go on Twitter and say, man, say what you want about Colby Covington, right? But 600 strikes, 220 takedowns in 25 minutes. I mean, there's just something to this guy and his ability to rise to the occasion, the cardio, the pace, and everything else. Offensively, were you as blown away by I was sitting octagon side that night?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, he didn't stop. He went with a game plan. He stuck with it. And Robbie, who is someone who has fought everybody and anybody. And listen, Kenny and I thought that his power and his technical striking was going to be the difference maker here. And Colby outstruck Robbie in every way. His angles were perfect. His combinations were there. I've never seen a pace like that. And I do think after seeing that fight, when I thought Usman was not going to lose again for the next 10 years, I do think Colby presents a challenge because anyone who throws that amount of strikes, I mean, I know a couple of these fighters made jokes that there wasn't a lot of power behind them, but when you're getting hit that amount of time, the power adds up after a while. And his, you know, the threat of the takedown, and he just doesn't stop. Kenny and I did speak about this. You know, we would have liked to have seen Colby finish that submission in the first and second round. He had a really good position on Robbie, but the fact that that didn't even faze him, that he couldn't get it, and he kept going and going, this made me really excited for the Usman fight. I'm now okay with Masvidal fighting Leon Edwards and letting Colby actually get this title shot. That performance against Waller, I thought, was flawless. And anyone who says that Robbie didn't show up, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Ian Parker with us every week here for the Main Event Challenge. Thank you, buddy. Good luck this weekend. And I don't know, dude, maybe cut me in or something. I mean, these tuitions are expensive.
I got you. Listen, do me a favor. You could send TJ the picture. I give you permission. All right, just so he can sleep better tonight, and I got you. I'll give you a nice percentage. We're good.
Anybody can learn how to use Photoshop, man.
All right. That is true. That is
we'll
true.
Get Ian Parker out of there on that, and that's it for the Main Event Challenge. And we got to get out of here for the week. It is late here on the East Coast. Thank you to the usual suspects, TJ DeSantis at the controls, Ray Longo, Ian Parker, and you know, we're going to turn this thing right around next Monday. Full recap of UFC 241. We hope you will join us this weekend for the pay-per-view prelims prior on ESPN. With that, for Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Thank you all for listening. No more days off until next week. Be well. Don't text and drive.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Its content is intended for private use only.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.